Good afternoon, everybody. How's it going? This is another edition of the Packers podcast at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm sitting here with Bob McGinn. Bob, how are we doing here at McGinn headquarters?
Good. We've had a little, we like your music choice, Tyler. Sometimes I listen to Austin City Limits.
Do you?
Public TV.
Okay.
And some of your alt groups appear on there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I got to tune in to PBS a little
Good
bit
show.
More. What, can you think of any bands at the top of your head who have been on there?
I can't right off the top.
The Avett Brothers, possibly?
Yeah, I believe
I think
they were.
Coming up on there.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was actually the Silver Sun Pickups, Lazy Eye, another good band. Got a good flow, new rock. I think, are you kind of starting to embrace this a little
bit? I've learned a lot about different forms of music, Tyler.
Yeah.
I get out of my Motown ways, you know.
Your Motown ways? Well, we're actually going to be heading to the concert, hopefully, Friday night. In Madison, the Dead Horses and Chicken Wire Empire Bluegrass Fest at the Majestic. It should be fun.
At the Majestic in Madison?
Yeah, it's a cool little venue. Yeah, we saw the Devil Makes Three, like upbeat bluegrass band there before, so should be fun.
Awesome.
But before then, it's been pretty busy here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, Lambeau Field. The playoffs have arrived, Bob, and we haven't done one of these in a while, so it's going to be back.
It was nice to have that week off.
Yeah,
the weekend off. I'll take that, huh?
You'll take it. The listeners weren't happy though that we didn't that we waited this long to do a podcast. We've got your emails, your tweets. So we're back. We didn't go anywhere. We're back. We're going to talk about it all today. We'll talk about number 12, Tony Romo, the special teams, Sam Barrington. You wrote a column on just how the cornerback position, Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, all those guys have kind of transformed the Packers defense, allow them to do what they want to against the running game in front of them. And then you're going to break down the Cowboys. So it all comes down to this. You know what, Bob? I mean, hey, regular season success is one thing. Postseason is another. Since they won the Super Bowl, we've had a lot of these postseason failures, a lot of letdowns this time of year. Is it going to be different this year? What signs do we see that suggests they won't lay an egg against Dallas?
They've played so great at home, you know. They're healthy. They're a real good team. And they should do well. There's no reason for them to flop. So Dallas is a beatable team. And the Lions proved that. So that's where we are. I mean, how do you see this game?
I just think that these teams are so evenly matched. Across the board, I mean, you have two quarterbacks, probably the two best in the NFL, though Tom Brady might have something to say about that. Two running backs that are built for the cold, Eddie Lacy, DeMarco Murray. They can both play in any environment that they'll have on Sunday. We'll talk about the weather a little bit, too. Big receivers, playmaking receivers, defensively pretty opportunistic, pretty similar there. And, you know, I talked to Desmond Howard this week, and we'll get into it later, but I can see this game just kind of coming down to a quirky special teams play or a big return or just something out of the ordinary, because you put this game on paper, both teams are very similar. And I know the Packers are great at home. They're 8-0 at home, and they just have a different kind of sense about them, this feeling that they're just going to dominate. I mean, that's what players say. But guess what? Dallas is pretty dang good on the road, too. They're 8-0 on the road. They went into Seattle, and they beat the Seahawks. They didn't play afraid like Green Bay's offense did that day in week one. They beat the defending champs. It's going to be a heck of a game. It really is. What do we want to talk about? We haven't done one of these in a while. We didn't really hit on the Lions game and how that finished up. Want to hit on that real quick, Bob, before we really get into this matchup?
All I can remember, Tyler, is the Dallas-Detroit game. Honest.
And so at your
age, I'm
like
a player and a coach. I mean, I just stick on these one, you know, it's week to week, man. You got any thoughts on this Lion Packers game?
Well, you know, the quarterback, he had the calf injury pop up in a different spot, left the game. I think that everybody there in Lambeau Field just thought that the season was toast at that point. I mean, they're playing bang the drum. Everybody's celebrating. Randall Cobb's doing his little thing where he points the ball in the air after a touchdown. And Aaron Rodgers is down. The whole place goes silent. He leaves. He comes back. I mean, look, a lot of guys play hurt, and Aaron Rodgers is one of them. a heck of a feat for the quarterback to come back and play the way he did. So I guess the big question now, we're taping this Thursday morning, is how effective will Aaron Rodgers be on the cap against Dallas? He was really, really good inside the pocket against Detroit. They played a different game, kind of played a Tom Brady type of game where a lot of in-breaking routes, a lot of just shuffling around in the pocket, and the offensive line probably didn't get enough credit for that game, I mean, to give him the time that he had. So do they have to play that kind of game, Dallas, against Dallas? Or will he be able to extend plays, to put in some plays where he is moving around? And we all know that's probably what Rodgers does best. Kind of hard to analyze that at this point because I don't know if anybody realizes what Aaron Rodgers will or will not be able to do Sunday, Rodgers included. He hasn't practiced yet. We'll see what he does here Thursday. But it's going to be a reactionary type of thing, isn't it, Bob, where he gets out there and then kind of figures out in real time how much he can push off that calf, what he can do, what he can't do, and what type of game it is.
Yeah, we're talking about something we have no idea, we have no knowledge of, and I hate talking about things that are just completely subjective. I assume he's going to be as good as he was against Detroit after he came back, probably quite a bit better. He's had 2 weeks. You got cold weather. But it's not going to be that cold. What, you're talking low 20s now is the latest. We're talking here on Thursday morning.
Yeah, and what has everybody freaking out right now is, I mean, it's -5 and a -30 wind chill this week. I mean, it's just unbelievable how cold it's been these last few days. It's not going to be that bad Sunday, like you said.
No, so I don't know. I mean, whatever we think right now is meaningless on this injury, and I think he's going to be out there playing well. The odds are that he goes the full 60 minutes, and the odds are Dallas is going to have a major problem with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Dallas has done defensively, and it's unbelievable. I mean, remember how bad this defense was in Dallas when we're down there in Texas? I mean, completely gave the game away, 26-3, and they just fell apart defensively, and that was the norm with Monty Kiffin. I mean, gave up just historic amounts of yardage. They toughened up. But at the end of the day, I mean, they've really been feasting on turnovers, right? I mean, 18 interceptions, 13 forced fumbles, I believe. The second most takeaways in the NFL, that's kind of been how this defense operates. A lot of the same personnel, and they lost a couple guys, but they've overachieved, which is great. That's a big reason they're here is what they've done with that. But the Packers don't turn the ball over with Aaron Rodgers. They don't. I mean, they don't give you those opportunities, so even if he's kind of hobbling around on one leg, he can still operate in the pocket. He can still make good decisions and play that type of game. So, yeah, you're right. We don't know. It's subjective, all of that. I think the Green Bay offensively is going to be able to move the ball and score points, whether it's Eddie Lacy, who is fresher, a lot fresher. He talked about this yesterday than he was last year with that ankle sprain and all the issues he had there. He's in a position to carry the ball 25 times if he needs to. I don't think it's going to be a close game, but I don't think any concerns for Green Bay are really on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Tyler. I certainly like what Rod Marinelli's done. And the way their D-linemen come out of that pack and chase back on screens, it's really something else. But that's the way Marinelli's always coached. I remember when he was a defensive line coach for the Buccaneers for 10 years. This is when assistant coaches were available basically for every team after every game, including Green Bay. And several times when those Bucs were playing in Green Bay, I talked to Rod Marinelli out by the team bus. And I can remember this 3 or 4 times, and he was really something else. And he'd be saying, "But we didn't hustle hard enough. We didn't play hard enough." Maybe they lost a close game or something like that. The guy was just, he was pretty tunnel visioned, amazingly intense. When you see him over on the sideline, that's the kind of guy he is in person. And I can just see the way that he coaches and the way that defense plays is a complete reflection of him.
You know, my mini Rod Marinelli story is kind of similar. So 1 week when I was down in Chicago covering the Bears, it was in 2012, I believe. And at the time, the Bears were first in the division, and they were taking the ball away a ton. Tillman was doing his thing. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, with what everybody knows what Rod Marinelli did in Detroit, they didn't win a game, all of that. But I just kind of asked him, you know, do you think you might get a head coaching opportunity if this keeps up? And he kind of gave me this weird quizzical look and kind of said, well, I don't know. There's a little baggage there. I don't think so. Talking about the 0-16. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was just kind of funny. But he does. He finds a way. At this point, it's not a coincidence. I mean, his teams take the ball away and they toughened up. It's just hard to see Green Bay's offense stalling at home in this one. You know, when the Giants kind of took it to them in 11, when the Niners had some success last year, it was a front four that could get to the quarterback. It was just a very sound defense across the board. I just don't know if Dallas is on that level. So, you know, you'll break down the lineup here soon. Before we get into that, though, you know, you wrote a really interesting article in the Journal Sentinel today on Tony Romo. And he could have been a Green Bay Packer. I mean, this is something that a lot of people don't realize, that they like this guy. It didn't happen, and I guess Packer fans should be happy because it led to Aaron Rodgers.
I'd heard about this for several years, and this was the right time to write it before Tony Romo's in town, you know? So in 2003, the Packers' Midwest scout was Sean Harrock. He had that job for almost 20 years. He's now a director of college scouting for the Oakland Raiders. And Harrock loved Tony Romo. When he made the school call down in Charleston at Eastern Illinois, Romo sat in the film room and watched tape all day with Sean Harrock. He was so excited to have a scout from Green Bay appear on this small Division I AA at the time campus. So Harrock loved him and wrote a great report and came back and gave him a third-round grade.
Is that right?
Yeah. I looked at my draft series after talking about 8 or 10 scouts on Romo and many more scouts on the other top quarterbacks. I think I had him 14th on the list. Well, 13 were drafted, I think it was, yeah. Mark Hatley, the late Mark Hatley, who was director of football operations at the time in Green Bay. That was Mike Sherman's top personnel guy. He gave him a fourth-round grade. But in the building, as Sean Harrock said this week, Hatley was the only other person who really liked Romo. And when they tried to sell this player in the building, he never got anywhere. And sources have said that he never got anywhere because of Tom Rossley, the offensive coordinator, a longtime QB coach, and Mike Sherman's number one confidant on all things offensive offensive skill positions. It may have been the case where the tape never even got to Mike Sherman. He was running the draft board. He was the GM, but, you know, to them, to the Packers, Romo was a nothing. And so Sean never had a chance really to fight for the guy in any kind of group meetings, say pre-combine, those February discussions, and then pre-draft in April. After the draft, 20 teams called Romo. Romo told Mark Stewart, at the time, one of our Badger writers, does a great job covering high schools. And I read Mark's story. 20 schools called Romo, 20 teams. And he took the Cowboys, who offered him a 10 grand signing bonus, took them over Denver. Dallas had Sean Payton, a former EIU quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He was their QB coach in Dallas. That was the big factor. Cowboys had a 6th or 7th round grade on Romo at the time. Green Bay signed Jose Fuentes from Utah State.
The immortal Jose Fuentes.
Gave him a 4 grand signing bonus. This is at the same time they could have had Romo.
Wow.
As Troy Aikman told our Tom Silverstein, who's down in Irving this week, Romo would have come to Green Bay. He was in love. He idolized Brett Favre. He wanted to play for this team. But there was no call, and had there been a call, Romo would have come to Green Bay and would have been here. Fuentes, by the way, lasted 2 weeks. Cut on May 16th.
14 days, huh?
Yep, 14 days. So we know about Romo's career.
So, all right, what year would this have been again?
2003.
So as part of this also, Mike Sherman looking at the quarterback position and saying, we've got Brett Favre, let's not worry about anything at that position at all. You know, where they really didn't do what Ron Wolf did through the 90s in drafting guys and replenishing and trying to think a few steps ahead.
No, it's not like that. You're right, Sherman stopped drafting QBs, but they wanted to draft a QB in this first round. They liked Grossman, Rex Grossman. They like Kyle Bowler. Of course, they like Carson Palmer, who was the top pick. And there was a fourth one, a Byron Leftwich. I believe they would have taken, well, I can't say this for sure, but I think at 29, where they took Nick Barnett, they would have taken any of those four.
Do you really?
Well, honestly, I talked to him after that, after the second day of the draft, and we went through it all. I reread my story. He was high on all those players, and they were set. They were eager to take a QB.
I don't know. Mike Sherman's running the show. Do you think he would have brought somebody in to, that could have threatened Brett Favre at that point of his career? Because he gave Favre a lot of freedom.
They were a little worried. Brett's last 8 or 9 games in 02, his passer rating was 64.9.
Yeah, but they were...
Picks all over the field, Tyler.
In 02?
Yes. He was great early in 02, and then he went about face.
So that was the Michael Vick year when Vick ran all. Okay. Yeah, but they were still a win over the Jets in that last week away from being the number one seed or and having home field through the playoffs. And then the next year's when they were 4th and 26 away. So it's not like they were a declining, fading team.
No, they were a good team. But their number one need on offense was quarterback. They were stocked everywhere else. This was a huge issue, and Favre was 34. He had already talked a little tiny bit about retirement, so this was an issue, and they thought they could handle it at this time. But they didn't want Tony Romo.
First of all, isn't that remarkable? In 02, there was a little talk about retirement. He played till 2010.
Yeah, you got it. We lived it here, Tyler, believe me.
Yeah, I came in at the right time.
All right, so Parcells sees flashes from Romo in his first training camp, and he beats out Clint Starner, Stoerner, I believe. He had been there 3 years in Dallas. This was his 4th year. Tony beat him out. He was number 3. The next year he beat out Chad Hutchinson for the number 3. Hutchinson had been paid big money a year earlier. And then the next year, he and Drew Henson kind of shared the number 2 job. And then in his 4th year, 06, he won the job from Drew Bledsoe at midseason. Now let's go back to the Packers, which really gives the story a little bit of oomph. So now we're in 05, and let's assume Darrell Bevell was a good quarterback coach. We've seen what he's done in Seattle. He's a masterful play caller out there. And let's assume the Packers would have either drafted or signed Romo as Hatley and Mr. Herrock, wanted them to do. All right, let's say he developed, he makes the team, he beats out Craig Nall or Doug Peterson or whoever, and he's the backup to Favre, and he's hanging around, and now Dallas paid him going into his 3rd year. Okay, let's say Green Bay would have paid him as well, developed by Bevell. Now they're going into the 05 draft. They have Tony Romo and Brett Favre. Brett's 36 going on 37. And Aaron Rodgers starts plummeting. They got a really good prospect here in Romo. You got Mike Sherman going into the final year of his contract, basically. He's just been stripped of the GM thing by Bob Harlan, given to Ted Thompson. He's working with a guy that he doesn't really get along with. Do they still take Aaron Rodgers at 24 when the air comes out of him?
Not if they saw something in Tony Romo that they like.
Sean Herrick has thought about this many, many times, and he believes Ted still would have taken Rodgers. He said he's too great of a player, he fell too far, and they still take a great player like that. I'm not sure if they do or not. Mike Sherman might have won that battle. I mean, he didn't really want Rodgers, and he needed a player to win. And when you look at the board there in the 05 draft, there wasn't a whole lot left, but I'm not sure. But, hey, the Packers made the most wonderful pick in many, many years around here, and it shaped their last decade.
And, you know, the Mike McCarthy would call this a hypothetical. I'd call
yes,
it a,
he would.
A counterfactual. I love counterfactuals, Bob. I mean, it's great. We had a history class in college at Syracuse, and this teacher, or our professor, like half of the semester was just about counterfactuals and looking back in history, and if this happened, what would have happened there, and if that happened, what would have happened here? And it's remarkable when you really think about it with the Packers, how everything kind of aligned in so many ways for them to have Brett Favre all those years and then to have Aaron Rodgers all these years. It's like another example would be, I guess, I don't know who I was talking to, one of the former Packers on a recent story, and It's like, you know, they took Tony Mandrich over a lot of really good players. Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, right? Or was Deion ahead of
Broderick
him?
Thomas, I mean, yeah. Right.
So, all right, you do that. I mean, do you get Brett Favre? I mean, do the dominoes still fall that way? I don't know. So yeah. It's just things kind of happen for a reason, and they've happened in the right way for Green Bay the last few
How about decades. This, Tyler? I was shocked when I looked this up. We know Aaron Rodgers is the top-rated career passer rating, 106.0. Tony Romo's number two all time. I think it's 97.3.
Really?
He's number two. He's just ahead of Brady, Manning, Steve Young. The top two QBs of all time are here, and Green Bay had that decision to make, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
It is. And
something different.
It was an incredibly interesting read, the kind of thing that you just – usually we have no clue what's happening behind closed doors, especially around here, and it really was insightful, Bob. Great, great stuff.
Thanks a lot, Ty.
So, I mean, Tony Romo is right now with the Cowboys playing the best football of his career. A lot of it has to do with DeMarco Murray. Absolutely. I mean, all these players in Green Bay, you ask about Tony Romo, one of the first things they say is – the difference this year is he has a running game. He has a great offensive line. Kind of think back to what did Brett Favre say a couple years ago? It was right after one of Romo's collapses late in the season and Favre was on TV talking how, yeah, I mean, look at Tony Romo at the line. He's pointing everybody a million different directions. Nobody knows what's going on around him. He's trying to get people in the right spot. It's kind of chaotic where now he does have a good supporting cast and everybody is on the same page. It's Tony. If there's a quarterback who can come into Lambeau Field and win, is a Romo that kind of quarterback that's got the, I don't know, the mental fortitude and the supporting cast and everything to pull off that kind of a win? What have you seen out of him on tape?
Personally, I haven't been that impressed with that Detroit game, Tyler. I think the guy's hurting. I think he's been beat down. I don't see any burst trying to escape the Lions' rush, the Lions' blitzes. I mean, there's times if he had his legs and if he had more physical explosiveness still right now, he could have escaped trouble and got out to the flank. Even if he doesn't run, he at least could have thrown downfield. But he really struggled, to me, avoiding getting out of the trash, avoiding people. And I know Green Bay or Detroit's front is very, very good. And I thought Terrell Austin, his blitzes were just fantastic. I think he was unpredictable, and he really surprised Dallas with that. But still, I see lack of flexibility in Tony Romo right now, lack of foot speed. I mean, he only ran a 5.01 coming out, but I don't know what he'd run now. I think the guy's hurting, and I just don't know about his mobility and just really where he is.
Well, I mean, he had the best December passer rating of all time. I mean, that's got to count for something, doesn't it?
He did. He definitely did. I just didn't really like him in that Detroit game. I sure didn't like his first half.
It was
inaccurate. Jeez.
It was a miserable first half.
Holding the ball too long. It was pretty brutal.
All right, so let's look at Green Bay then. We'll kind of segue into another story that you wrote recently. If you're the Packers, if you're Dom Capers, and you're facing DeMarco Murray, 1,800 yards, and he had the hand injury, but he's back. He's running hard. You have to drop down Morgan Burnett, right? I mean, right now Burnett is – really been an incredible extra linebacker against the run. I mean, you saw it there in Tampa, saw it again against Detroit many times. He can provide that presence, and against DeMarco Murray, you have to do that, right? Even though you have Dez Bryant, Jason Witten, all these guys, you have to bring them down there and rely on your cornerbacks outside to hold up?
I think so. You wrote the story on Dez Bryant the other day, in which you talked to Micah Hyde and Dom Capers. So you know how big of a threat Dez Bryant is, but as you just discussed, the offensive line and Murray is another threat. So let's assume you're right and they play the way they've been playing the whole second half of the year. Let's assume they play with that single shell, Burnett down close, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the matchups. They've not matched corners with anybody all year. So you got Tremont Williams sitting at the left. You got Sam Shields sitting at the right. And then you got various nickel people on the slot. I think they'll do it again, and let those people try to handle Dez Bryant.
looking back at that last game, too, in Dallas last year, I mean, he went for 11 for a 153 and a touchdown. And everybody was at fault. I mean, there's the one play where Sam Shields' eyes are just glued to the backfield, and he's just waiting for who knows what. There wasn't even really a play-action fake or anything in the backfield. Does Brian beat somebody to go out for 40 yards or so. Deep cross, they blitz Micah Hyde. Burnett draws Dez Bryant one-on-one, beats him on a deep cross, and then he just had that insane touchdown, I mean, in the back of the end zone where it's, I remember watching it in real time, and it was incredible that, man, you watch it again, and he kind of runs a little route. He sees Romo scrambling right, gets vertical to the back of the end zone, doesn't have much space to work with at all. MD Jennings is completely face guarding him, somehow catches it, taps his feet down. Morgan Burnett just can't believe it. He's signaling. You know, he's storming after the official who signaled touchdown just because he didn't think it was close. So he is this rare talent. How are these cornerbacks different this year? And how is the secondary different this year than it was then? Because you have to assume there's going to be times Shields is on him. It doesn't seem like Shields has been peeking into the backfield as much this year. He hasn't been perfect, but he's been better of late. Tremont Williams has been Tremont Williams. And Tavon House said the other day he expects to play, and he expects to be the same exact cornerback he was before he hurt his scapula on that breakup against Atlanta. So my question for you is, I guess, what's different this year than last year? If they are going to be in this single high look and you have to stop Dez Bryant, is it going to be different?
They've hung in against most people, you know. They haven't, other than Julio Jones. These cornerbacks have played good football in man situations. I mean, it's they're playing as much man as I guess Kansas City's playing more when experts look at these tapes, but Green Bay's right there in man, and they cover well. They're not great tacklers, but they're athletic, graceful people. We're speaking of Williams and Shields and House. I don't see House really playing unless one of those two corners outside gets hurt. You know, I mean, he's got a month of rust on him now. I just don't see him. He could play in dime, but
well, if you want to throw a different body at Dez Bryant, say he starts going off, you have Tavon House there.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point. All right, you got Cole Beasley inside, Terrence Williams. Williams is okay. I mean, there's so much stuff going on over at Dez Bryant's side of the field that, you know, Williams has gotten some casual coverage. Cole Beasley's not bad. He's a poor man's Randall Cobb, you know the type. Poor man's Edelman, maybe. Green Bay's going to have to rely on those corners, and they've done it all year, and they have not been disappointed. They're just really good players, and they're kind of underappreciated.
Really interesting column again, Bob, and that was probably one of my favorite columns you've written this year, and it's one of those things, I think, that it's so easy to fall into the trap with this run defense that, oh, it's because Clay Matthews is playing more inside. Well, it's not just that. I mean, that's helped a ton, but that's the talking point. Guess what? It's a lot more than that. It's Sam Barrington's increased role. I mean, he's been an upgrade. And really, this cornerback dynamic, it helps everything. When you can rely on your cornerbacks and man-to-man coverage, and really of late, I remember talking to Joe Witt, the cornerback's coach, and he was asked about the Atlanta game and Julio Jones, and he set the record and everything. And he kind of was biting his tongue. And he said, well, a lot of that was kind of working against zones and finding breaking points in zones. And, you know, it was very zone-centric, that kind of game. And guess what? Look, if you're a cornerback, I remember hearing Tremont Williams say this multiple times, they want to match up. They're not match up, but they want to cover. They want to cover man-to-man, play their game. And when they're doing that, been at their best, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, a quiet day from them. Calvin Johnson, I mean, he had the two touchdowns, but really didn't do much other than that. Only had 39 yards.
And it's not like the Packers are playing it safe to protect these corners. Even with the single shell, Dom Capers is blitzing sixth most in the NFL, according to stats. 39.3% blitz rate. That's my number, 39.3% on passes. That's the second highest in his six seasons. He's rushed more in the second half than the first half. They bring it. They put those guys on islands, period.
So seeing what you saw.
And that's not easy, folks. It's really not easy, right, Tyler?
Especially in today's game. I mean, what can you what can you do as a cornerback? Not much. So, I, you know what? I mean, we always talk about last year, that San Francisco game when they're down to Andy Malumba, Nate Palmer, and Dayton Jones playing, what, 10 snaps at outside linebacker. I mean, they were vanilla. I mean, they really didn't do much creatively against Colin Kaepernick. I don't think they're going to leave anything in the cupboard this game. I mean, if Tony Romo, like you said, is not quite right health-wise, mobility-wise, in the pocket, and they see that, and they know the cornerbacks can hold up, I think you're going to see some blitzes. You're going to see a lot of different things out of Dom Capers in this game, and they're going to try to leave it all out there, something they just couldn't do when they were down to, you know, very young, inexperienced players last year.
I think Terrell Austin and the Lions, you know, they got ahead, and I think they really stunned Romo. Neither of his two tackles, Jeremy Parnell, the backup for Manitowoc's Doug Free, who will play again, or Tyron Smith, neither one of them think that well on their feet. And you could see that again. I don't know the protection, but I suspect both those guys were involved in a sack each on blitz situations. I think Austin got them there on overloads and just sending different packages of people. You know Dom Capers is going to do the same thing.
Very interesting. Is Tony Romo going to give them one or two opportunities too? I mean, is he going to tee one up like he did at the end of the game in Dallas?
Yes, he is. He just is. He's kind of like the old Brett Favre, his idol.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been described as, you know, playing like Favre. And yeah, he's going to put one or two balls up, whereas Aaron Rodgers doesn't put any balls up.
So, you know, if they do hand the ball off to DeMarco Murray 25, 30 times, one player who is going to play a very critical role in this game is Sam Barrington.
So, Tyler, you did a long story on Barrington. And you tied him to some people in playoffs past for Green Bay, i.e. Bruce Wilkerson, the left tackle, who got the job in Game 16 in 1996. But tell us about Sam Barrington. It was an interesting thing. This guy's quite a different type guy, man.
He is. He's a tough guy, very confident. Said that, you know, I'm thinking that there's a point this year when he realized he could compete and be a playmaker at this level. He said that happened in his first training camp. You know, his first few practices, he believed he could hang, he could compete, he could be a difference maker on this team. He kind of cited all the battles he had with JerMichael Finley and how that raised the level of competition. And he actually watches film of every practice at home. You know, they do all that they do at the facility, but brings it home, watches practice constantly, rewatches it. And this Lions game, for example, he said he's seen it five times. You know, this was a week after they played the game. I already watched it five times just to try to pick up different things that maybe he didn't see the time before. He compared it to seeing a Disney movie. You know, you see a Disney movie enough times and, oh, what was that? You know, like, and actually, I don't know if you knew this, in certain Disney movies, you know, it's almost like the people that make the movies have sick minds. I mean, there's like little, like in The Little Mermaid, you know, the priest on the ship, he gets aroused in a children's movie.
Okay.
There's a lot of things like that. I don't know if that was what Sam Barrington was talking about. But anyways, so he's been a huge difference maker for this team. And, you know, whether it's 3-4 base, nickel, he's in there in multiple packages, and they're going to have to stop DeMarco Murray. They're probably going to have to play a lot of nickel, and they need a fast, aggressive, quick decision maker to kind of take down DeMarco Murray before he gets going, because he gets moving laterally, he plants, and he gets upfield. Just a different beast to cover. And I just, you know, they got Barrington in there a lot sooner than Wilkerson and James Starks. He was the other example. But it's the same kind of concept where if you're not evolving, if you're not tweaking, not changing, you're stagnant. You're not getting better, and you have to make the right changes. And I know the Packers, they stick with guys who are struggling, you know, whether it was Mason Crosby and his troubles he had a couple years ago or James Jones and his drops. But every once in a while, there's a young player who needs a bigger role, and that's been Sam Barrington this year, and, you know, he hasn't been perfect. He hasn't exactly been, DeAndre Levy in the middle of the defense. There was a couple plays in this Lions game, like you wrote about in Raiding the Packers, too, where maybe he triggered a little too quickly on Reggie Bush on a 14-yard run, kind of got in the backfield a little too quick. But overall, if he's going to make a mistake, it's going to be fast, and it's going to be aggressive, and that's kind of what they needed at the position.
Cost A.J. Hawk some playing time.
It did. Yeah, I read about A.J. Hawk and, you know, where he's at in this point of his career, and 2 weeks later, his role's diminished significantly, Bob.
He'll be out there Sunday, though.
That's what they tell you. I mean, you know, anytime Dom Capers is asked about A.J. Hawk, he says, look, he's still a big part of our defense. We just wanted multiple different linebackers in there for different packages. We don't want guys getting overloaded, and Hawk was playing a ton of snaps. So if they go 3-4 base, 15, 20 snaps, if that, he'll be out there.
All those guys are going to have to deal with Jason Witten, aren't they?
Is that going to be a Brad Jones assignment a lot of times? I mean, he's the dime linebacker still.
Well, I think I see Brad more on the running back, but Murray's a great receiver as well. And those little guys they got, Dunbar and Randall, especially Dunbar on third down, mm-hmm. He's pretty quick. I mean, all these matchups are tough this time of year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, you got the lineup there, Bob.
Should we go to the Cowboys?
Hit it up.
Let's look at them, huh? We've hit the top guys. Let's go to the, we discussed Romo. We got Brandon Weeden as the backup. Heaven help him if Tony goes down, huh? All right. That was Mike Holmgren's pick over in Cleveland, Mr. Brandon Weeden.
So they're 12-4, and really two of the losses were when Weeden was the quarterback, right?
Just one, I think.
Well, the one when Romo got hurt. I'm just adding that, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's go to the O-line. Tyron Smith is an absolute physical marvel at left tackle. His body has got that V. I mean, he I don't know what he looks like, a middle linebacker. He moves like one. He's fantastic. You just take a look at this guy on Sunday. But there is hesitation and some late react in his play that it's just been there. He doesn't think that great on his feet. That's his one problem. Right tackle, the solid Doug Free is out probably with a ankle? I can't remember. So we got Jeremy Parnell, a basketball player, a 50-year guy, former D lineman. He's had to start now 4 or 5 games. He's really a good athlete. Again, he has some reaction problems, but athletically he looks to finish. He's kind of nasty. I was impressed. All right, the center, Travis Frederick from the Badgers, a second-round pick. He's been all they wanted. They traded up for him, I believe, at number 32 last year. Frederick is a massive man, full beard, plays like the Badgers guys play.
Well-bearded.
Finishes, stout, tough on the angle blocks. Not so good at the second level, not so good in space. I mean, everybody knows he's one of the slowest centers to be drafted in years, and he is what he is, but he's a darn good player.
Pick was highly criticized.
It was down
at the time.
There. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Zach Martin, Jerry Jones, they prevailed upon Jerry to take Zach Martin over Johnny Manziel. They wouldn't be here had they not prevailed upon Jerry and not had Jerry not listened.
Did you catch Jerry Jones in the press box hanging out with Chris Christie?
I didn't even see that, no.
You didn't see that?
No, I'm sorry.
Are you living under a rock? Oh,
I watched
viral.
The game, but it went to Jerry. I didn't really look. So
yeah, Chris Christie was hanging out with him up there. They were all celebrating and man-hugging and living it up after that game.
So we got Zach Martin. He's got terrific feet. His hands are fast. He's really a good player. He played left tackle at Notre Dame. He could play left tackle here. He's been outstanding. The left guard, Ronald Leary. I like the guy. He really strikes a blow. You see a lot of just belly bumping and pushing and shoving in the NFL. This guy, he gets down, and in dry block situations straight ahead, he strikes a blow. Mike Daniels is going to have to really get leverage, and that's not a problem for Mike because Ronald Leary will match him blow for blow.
That is going to be one of the more underrated matchups in this game
by far. Leary's a tough guy, Tyler. He's a good player.
I'm more of a belly bumping guy, though, myself.
That was a Ron Wolf line, belly bumper.
Really?
He used to call Harry Galbraith a belly bumper. When he signed him, that was the line.
Wait, so you signed a guy? Like, was that a term of endearment?
Compliment, yeah.
A compliment.
Yeah.
You need some belly bumpers?
All right, we got the receivers. Okay, let's go to the D, right? Mr. Rod Marinelli's unit. They got an 8-man rotation up front. They lost Henry Melton, the ex-Bear, 2 weeks ago, but Melton was really not playing very well late in the year anyway, so it's not a loss. All right, at their best players, Tyrone Crawford, the 3 technique. He's good. He's fast. He's got quick twitch. They all chase like crazy. Crawford's a good player, and he's the 3 tech.
backup three tech, Terrell McClain, he's okay. The one technique, the noses, you got Nick Hayden from Arrowhead and the Badgers. Nick Hayden's not that big, but he doesn't buckle that bad against doubles. He's not bad. Now, he's not going to make a whole lot of plays, and he's not going to show range or rush, but at the point, for a smaller guy, he's pretty steady. Then you got Josh Brent, and we won't get into Josh Brent's off the field escapades a couple of years ago. That was pretty tragic. But Brent is a huge guy, 335, and he's just a different kind of guy than Hayden. He's a real space eater, and he's all right.
You know, just call a cab, people. Yeah. Really, just call a frickin' cab.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. All right, the left end, they've recycled George Selvey. I think it's his fifth team in 5 years. Selvey's long. He's 6'4 and a half. He's not terrible. He's an okay athlete. He really is. That's why he's had five jobs. Mm. Not much of a rush. He's replaced by Anthony Spencer from Purdue, who once was a really good pass rusher until he had all these knee problems. Microfracture. Hadn't done much all year until Sunday when the Cowboys, their coaches, credit him with six pressures, a team high. He did some things.
Yeah,
he see it.
Definitely jumped out watching that game.
So he's going to be, you know, he's a threat for Brian Bulaga. All right, at right end, you got Jerry Mincy. I remember talking to Jeremy at the Super Bowl last year. He was a backup for the Broncos playing like 10 snaps. John Elway had all those old guys. Well, Mincy came here for cheap, and he's really had a good year.
Hmm.
He's a two-handed bull rusher. You know, he flattens his back, and he'll put his hands on that left tackle, and he is walking people back. He did it to Riley Reed several times. I've seen it during the year. He's not bad. He's got a great motor as well. You wouldn't play for Marinelli if you did. And then they have DeMarcus Lawrence, a second-round pick. Broke his foot the first week of camp. Jerry Jones traded up for this guy. Came back at midseason. He was pretty much invisible. But he kind of had that game-clinching strip sack against Riley Reiff.
It was almost the bonehead of the game before that.
No doubt.
Which I didn't realize. You probably knew this. I didn't. At the time, it was kind of like a Leon Lett type of play, right? I
mean, yeah.
Just fall down. Leon Lett is one of the position coaches there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't even know that.
Cowboy fans just must have been screaming at Lawrence.
Oh.
And so then he came back. All right, the linebackers. We don't know if Orlando McClain is going to play. They need him. He's about 260. He's come from nowhere this year, resurrected his career. He's a big, hard-hitting, downhill guy, and you know, he's important to their run D. Other full-time 100% guys, Bruce Carter, a tremendous athlete for the position. Not real tough, not real strong, but he's got five picks, and he can run all over the place.
Here comes to every Lions fan's favorite linebacker next on your list, Anthony Hitchens.
Anthony Hitchens came from Iowa, one of three Hawkeyes last year. Everybody thought Kirksey was better, and Kirksey had a good year, but now Hitchens has played really well. He's really saved them. They lost Sean Lee in training offseason, it was. Blown knee, right? Yeah. Hitchens played well. He can run. He can cover. He's a pretty active guy. He's a pretty good rookie player for a fourth-round pick.
Was it pass interference, Bob?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Come on, Dallas.
I don't even know. The guy from far away said it was, and the guy who was close up said it wasn't. I don't know.
I'll say this. It was, all right, even if it was a terrible missed call, one of the worst calls ever, I mean, it blew up this week. The NFL reportedly apologized to the Lions. Just go for it on fourth and one the next play. Like, don't punt. I mean, they punt, they shank, they gave the Cowboys a chance. I mean, just go for it in that situation. It was kind of like Green Bay in that Eagles game we mentioned earlier. You got fourth and a couple feet, just get it at the end of the game, win it.
I can't see going for it when you got that goofball Garrett Reynolds, who's awful at right guard, Cornelius Lucas. Rayola can't knock anybody off anything. I don't like their old line, and I like the D, pin them down and let that D do the work. I didn't have a problem with it at the time, Ty. I can't second
really?
Guess Mr. Caldwell.
I'm going to second guess.
Jimmy's from Beloit. Give him a break.
All right. And since he's from Beloit, I guess we'll cut him some slack.
Kyle Wilbur's an old-fashioned strong side guy, plays 20%. All right, the secondary. Their best player is Orlando Scandrick. He plays outside on dime nickel. He plays inside. He's really fast in the seventh year. He's really a good player. He's the leader of that group. He's an emotional leader. He's a very, very good player, and I don't know how they'll use him. Brandon Carr has been a disappointment. Came from the Chiefs out of Grand Valley State. Really hasn't played very good football, especially lately. He struggles so much they've had to shade their coverage, rotate their zone coverages over to him. Leave Scandrick on an island. He's not very good. Sterling Moore, the former Patriots Super Bowl dime back or nickelback he was in that game, he's all right. He's kind of short at 5'9.5", and he doesn't run that good, but he's a smart guy. He's all right. Tyler Patman's the rookie dime. He's okay, too. Second, safeties, they got problems. Barry Church, he will knock your lights off, out, but he's runs 4.68, limited range. J.J. Wilcox is a converted running back. He played running back at Georgia Southern until the 2012 season.
Right.
You remember this guy at the combine. Bad angles. You could see it in the Detroit game. It's happened a lot this year. He will hit, and he's got pretty darn good speed. Secondary is a problem. Let's look at the special teams. Dan Bailey's unreal as a kicker. His kickoffs get such elevation. We'll see how he handles Lambeau. Chris Jones, a left-footed punter, he's all right. Dwayne Harris is a real tough dual return guy. Tough player. Also covers well. The man to watch on special teams is C.J. Spillman. He's outstanding. He'll be matched with Jarrett Bush, I'm guessing. The long snapper, he's been there a long time. Rich Passaccia won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay covering special teams. He's been around. That's the Cowboys, Tyler.
Well, special teams. Are they good on special teams?
They've only blocked one kick. They're middle of the pack on special teams.
Okay. Well, Green Bay's obviously had the 7 blocked kicks. Caught up with Andrew Corliss the other day about the most recent, and he said, I don't want to talk about it. I'll take the blame for it, but I was expecting a little bit of help there too. So who knows if J.C. Treader, to his right, was supposed to communicate or help him out or whatever. I don't know. Just before we take questions here, just wanted to mention the conversation I had with Desmond Howard about special teams, and boy, it can change a game. I mean, we talked about this team for 48, 49 minutes. Both are really, really good. Both are really, really explosive. It could come down to that one play on special teams that could just change everything. And so I just wanted to talk to Howard about when that exactly happened in the Super Bowl and his return and everything he did that run. And he made a really good point that, yeah, I mean, everybody knows Howard and, you know, and the punt game, the kick game, just how explosive he was and how he changed so many games that season. But he said their coverage units, they faced 2 Pro Bowlers that postseason as well. And Michael Bates, Carolina, 5-time All-Pro. He averaged like 14 yards a kick that game, kick return. And Dave Meggett, his longest kick return was 26 yards. So in Desmond Howard's words, they had, quote-unquote, gangsters on special teams. The guys you didn't want to mess with. Chris Hayes and Travis Jervey and Lamont Hollenquist and Roderick Mullen, all these guys, he said that multiple times, he just kept coming back to these guys. You know, he wanted to give them all the credit. Said, hey, look, it was everybody in that room realized that we were just as important to the game as this number one ranked offense, as this number one ranked defense. And special teams, I mean, there's a reason Desmond Howard was a Super Bowl MVP.
Bernardo Harris was one of those folks, and so was Keith McKenzie.
Keith McKenzie was another guy
you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was interesting to hear that from Howard, and
he liked Nolan Cromwell too, didn't he? I read that story.
Right.
Nolan
talked of Nolan Cromwell, and not to say that Sean Slocum is downplaying special teams. He's surely saying the same thing to his guys. But do they have those quote unquote gangsters on this team? Jared Bush, he said, I don't want to use that term, but. He said, let's go with Scrappy. Let's go with Hair on Fire. And he thinks that they do. I mean, what else is he going to say? I mean, he pointed to Chris Banjo, Brandon Bostic, Sean Richardson. It's, you know, on special teams, we tend to think about the returner and the punter and the kicker, but it's those core guys that you really have to lean on and rely on this time of year. We'll see very soon if they can bust one open. You know, Micah Hyde, he already tied Howard's record for 3 punt returns per touchdown. He's been in sync, and he's trusting the guys in front of him. could come down to one return. Wouldn't be surprised.
Good point. It was interesting to hear from Desmond.
Yeah, yeah.
Good story.
He was good with his time. All right, let's take some questions.
Page through it, T. Let's see what we got here.
Do you think, this one's from Adam Check. Yes. Do you think the Cowboys are hoping that Dom Capers blitzes heavy so they can attack with their assortment of screens and shallow crosses? So we talked about Capers and blitzing and bringing the house. They want to. Can Dallas counter with, you know, screens, shallow crosses, just things like that? Will they be able to take advantage of pressure?
They could. They certainly could. A lot of manned-up stuff after those six-man pressures. Capers usually comes with five. Dom has got to be on top of his game and send five where the Cowboys don't expect those five to be coming from. And those tackles are vulnerable. So is Romo.
Yeah.
They don't want to see Brandon Weeden on that field.
They do not.
Although Brandon played well at Lambeau for the Browns in an exhibition game a couple years ago. I saw Mike Holmgren after that game, and he was quite proud of Brandon that night.
Well, the Browns weren't that proud of him after the game last year. That was one of the worst quarterback exhibitions that we've seen in Green Bay in a while last year. All right, Dane Shuda, he asks, what player is most likely to make game-changing plays during this playoff run? He's thinking Tremont Williams in 2010. So what player is going to be that playmaker on this team, offense or defense, that kind of comes out of nowhere? I didn't come out of nowhere. But who's
gonna
be
your
that
playmaker,
guy?
Ty?
I'll stick with offense. Let's go with, he's not a playmaker in the sense you might think of it, but Richard Rodgers caught all the passes thrown to him against Detroit. Three on that fourth quarter drive, and they absolutely needed it. He's going to have opportunities if they're really going to be obsessed with Cobb and Nelson like they probably should in this game. You have to think that the big tight end is going to be an option. And he hasn't been much of a go-to threat all season, third-round pick. I was looking at the rookie tight ends, Bob. I mean, no rookie tight ends really did much this year at all. I mean,
I voted for All-Pro. It was a real problem.
Same here, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ebron didn't do anything in Detroit. Jace Amaro, I guess, was okay on a bad Jets team, but
Safarian
Jenkins
got
hurt.
I voted for him, but
So I think Richard Rodgers, I mean, in the cold climate, I mean, this is a big reason they drafted him. He's big. He's strong. He's got big hands. I can see him making some big catches in the postseason if they needed him to.
My playmaker, what did Mr. Check, how did he describe it?
Actually, this was Dane Shuda.
Oh, Dane. Game-changing plays, I'm going with 52, Clay Matthews.
Okay.
I'm going with chalk.
All right, you're taking the easy way out.
You got it.
All right.
Yep.
Well, hey, we went through a whole show without even talking about Clay Matthews.
Right.
Jeez. All right. At Deep Fried Stack, Dan asks, the over-under Eddie Lacy carries at 21.5. What say you? Over-under, 21.5
over,
carries.
Over-under. I'm saying under.
I'll say over.
Okay.
I'll say over. Let's say if Aaron Rodgers isn't able to maneuver quite as much, maybe it's a little bit more of the Eddie Lacy show.
All right.
All right, Thad Collins. Thad.
If House is indeed available, I'll read this one for you, Tyler. Would it be wise to throw him directly into a game after so long off? Does he have any utility?
First of all, good to see you, Thad. Hung out with him in New York City when the Packers played out there. He's a good man. He's a world traveler. Was out in London.
All right.
He's all over the place. Thad, I don't know if it would be wise. I mean, he says, I asked him directly, how effective can you really be? You missed this time. You've got this shoulder issue. And he said, I expect to be as great, whatever, as I was before. And the player you saw there against Atlanta, against New England, that will be the player you see. So he's confident. Joe Witt has put him through some hellish workouts there, it sounds like. Some pretty rough workouts to get back to this point. I don't know if it'd be wise to just throw him out there against Dez Bryant. I think that more what you see is what we said earlier, that if Shields or Williams is struggling, if like Shields did against Julio Jones, maybe Devon House is an option. It's somebody they kind of turn to because you're not going to put him in the slot. He's an outside corner. You have Hayward and Hyde in there. I think he's just kind of on deck if they need him. But okay, we'll see what happens. All right, let's get to one more. All right. Mark Pellman, Pell's Cuse. A good Syracuse fan here. Mark, are we seeing some gamesmanship by McCarthy concerning Rogers' calf?
I plead ignorance. I don't know. You were there yesterday.
Well, everybody keeps saying that they're not concerned, not worried. He didn't practice Wednesday. We'll see what he does here soon. By the time you're listening, you'll probably know more than we know right now about his about his practice status. But I don't know. I mean, I guess he didn't sound quite as optimistic on Wednesday as he did Monday. But as we said earlier, there's so much up in the air. I think it really is something that goes up to game time that they decide what he can and can't do. He's going to play. He says he's going to play. I don't think that he does not play in the playoff game.
Right.
All right.
Before we close?
Yes.
I'd just like to say that I know a lot. The interest in the Super Bowl book over the holidays was really outstanding, and I know a lot of it came from this podcast because it's an area that I don't even know if we discussed it last year, but I know a lot of people got on that from the podcast. So Pat and I want to say thanks to you all. It was really fun to do.
It's a great gift. It's a great book, great read. Definitely worth everybody's time. So check it out, and we'll see if the Packers will be adding to the Super Bowl book in their own way this year, Bob.
Right.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.